Today is Monday, January 24, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Mike Ove in Washington. Tensions between the United States and Russia continue to rise over Russia military buildup near Ukraine.
NATO has certainly confirmed that several of its members are putting forces on standby and sending additional ships and fighter jets to the eastern part of the alliance, to Eastern Europe, as a deterrence to Russia.
Burkina Faso's military has seized power and is holding President Roch Kabore at a military camp.
Protests then occurred again on Saturday this week, but were quickly put down by local police using tear gas.
We'll have these stories and more next. There are reports that U.S. President Joe Biden is considering sending thousands of troops and dispatching warships and aircraft to NATO allies, a significant change in U.S. strategy over the last 24 hours. VOA's Carol Van Dam asked VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain about this and other recent developments amid escalating fears of a Russian invasion of Ukraine.
What we are hearing, NATO has certainly confirmed that several of its members are putting forces on standby and sending additional ships and fighter jets to the eastern part of the alliance, to Eastern Europe, as a deterrence to Russia in the face of what looks like an imminent invasion. And NATO is saying that the U.S. is also considering increasing its military force. And several news outlets, we've not been able to independently confirm exactly what the U.S. is planning on doing, but several news outlets are saying that President Biden is rethinking his strategy with regard to Russia and Ukraine, and that up to now has been very cautious and really pushing for diplomacy with Russia to try to get them to settle security issues diplomatically and not invade, and now switching more to a strategy of, okay, we're going to seriously boost our defensive military posture in Eastern Europe as a deterrent, instead of worrying about angering Russian President Putin, showing some force.
That definitely sounds like a change in strategy, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And we had the U.S. On Sunday, the State Department having an unusual background briefing and saying, ordering the departure of family members of diplomats in Kyiv and authorizing the voluntary departure of embassy members, telling Americans not to travel to Ukraine, and even recommending Americans who live in the country to leave the country by using commercial means. So obviously there are very serious concerns, and asked about what triggered this Sunday evening change in the embassy status. State Department officials said, well, President Biden has said that Russia could invade at any moment, and that these changes to the embassy come at against the backdrop of an increasing Russian threat.
And over the weekend, we also heard from Britain's foreign secretary that Russia is looking at possibly installing a handpicked leader in Ukraine if Russia does indeed invade Ukraine. What can you tell us about that?
Right. The reports from this British intelligence even named the names of Ukrainian politicians who Russia had picked. And this was apparently would follow if there is a Russian invasion and Russia basically takes over Ukraine, takes over Kyiv, then this would follow on that. And asked about that in this briefing, which I took part in, the State Department officials said, well, yes, we have been saying for some time that Russia is using all kinds of means. You know, they didn't specifically confirm this one piece of intelligence, but they basically said, yes, Russia has been looking at installing what some would call puppets, you know, Moscow-friendly people in Kyiv.
And how unusual is it that Britain or any government, for that matter, would make that kind of information public at this point in time with supposedly talks still going on?
I think it is very unusual. And analysts whom I've spoken to, security analysts, say basically making this public, you know, is a bold step, but it is designed to tell the Russians, look, we know, we see exactly what you're doing, and to hopefully foil that, you know, to expose by naming names, to say, you know, basically, you're not going to get away with this. And the U.S. has also said that Russia is planning so-called false flag operations, sending agents in who are trained in explosives to basically attack the own Russian-backed separatist forces in eastern Ukraine to make it look like Ukrainians did it, to have a false pretext for attack. So I think the U.S. and Britain are taking these unusual steps in releasing intelligence to try to spoil these operations, to keep them from happening.
I see. And just to take that a step further, does the talk over the possibility of sending U.S. troops and aircraft and more to the Baltics and Eastern Europe mean that there really is no hope anymore for diplomacy?
That's a very good question, Carol, because, you know, as far as we know, we had Blinken and Lavrov meeting in Geneva on Friday. And the last we heard from that was that the U.S. was going to do what Russia wants and send in writing responses to Russia's security questions. So that, I think, is still going on. And I suppose at the moment, we still have two parallel tracks, but it certainly would look like that the U.S. and NATO are also trying to flex the muscle here and to show Russia that an invasion would have serious consequences.
Sounds like you might say they're looking at who blinks first.
Right, exactly. And we had seen, you know, an analyst that I've been talking to have been saying that Putin has been carrying on brinksmanship with this for some time. Now we've got 127,000 Russian troops stationed near several of its borders with Ukraine. And now it looks like the U.S. and NATO are saying, okay, well, two can play at that game.
That was VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam Monday. Dina Spechler, a political science lecturer at Indiana University, also comments on the matter.
Russia doesn't want Ukraine to join NATO because ever since the end of World War II, Russia has defined its security as requiring buffer states between it and the West. Russia views NATO as a hostile, aggressive alliance aimed at undermining Russian security. If Ukraine were to join NATO, that would eliminate a crucial buffer, which Russia regards as essential to protect it. If President Putin decides to move his troops into Ukraine, Ukraine is likely to resist militarily in whatever way it can. If that happens, the U.S. is likely to continue to supply arms to the Ukrainian government and to insurgents, more than the $2 billion we've already provided, possibly moving beyond the primarily defensive weapons that we've provided so far. The U.S. is involved in the conflict between Russia and Ukraine because we've incurred an obligation to be involved. We have no formal treaty with Ukraine guaranteeing its security, but we have made a strong informal commitment to protect it from Russian aggression. In 1994, we were eager to induce Ukraine to transfer to Russia the many hundreds of nuclear weapons that it inherited when the Soviet Union disintegrated and Ukraine achieved independence. We signed a memorandum providing assurances to Ukraine that we were committed to its security should it become the victim of an act of aggression. And in exchange for those assurances, Ukraine agreed to turn over all its nuclear weapons to Russia for dismantling and signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty as a non-nuclear state. So we have a moral, if not a formal legal obligation, to honor the commitment that we made to Ukraine.
That was Dina Spechler, a political science lecturer at Indiana University. UN Chief Antonio Guterres told Associated Press that he believes Russia would not invade Ukraine and strongly hopes that de-escalation and dialogue between Russia, Ukraine, and the United States would allow for a solution to the crisis, in turn avoiding military confrontation.
I do not think Russia will invade Ukraine, and I hope that my belief is correct. I think we do not need to have a dramatic situation in that region that would have, of course, terrible consequences. And I strongly hope that de-escalation and dialogue will allow for a solution, avoiding the kind of confrontation that would have inevitably terrible consequences.
That was UN Chief Antonio Guterres. The military in Burkina Faso has seized power, and President Roch Kabore is being held at a military camp. Reporter Henry Wilkins is in the capital, Ouagadougou, and he spoke with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson about the situation. He explains after 6 years of conflict with Islamist militants and regional bandits, many in Burkina Faso have lost confidence in the Kabore government's ability to bring peace. Two large attacks last year particularly drove public anger, and people in November took to the streets to protest. Kabore reacted by ordering a crackdown on protests and firing many military commanders and some of his cabinet. But Wilkins says over the weekend, things changed.
Protests then occurred again on Saturday this week, but were quickly put down by local police using tear gas. The following day, the largest military base in Ouagadougou mutinied. I actually managed to get into that military base yesterday after being detained for about half an hour by the mutineers, who then gave us a list of their demands before setting us free. Their demands included the replacement of the chief of the army, the chief of the intelligence service, more troops to fight the war against the terror groups, and better treatment of the families of the military dead who have died in the conflict.
Now, Burkina Faso has been part of the G5 Sahel effort to contain extremist violence, rebel violence around the region. Is this likely to affect that relationship with the other G5 Sahel nations or with the partners such as France?
I mean, that is still up for grabs at the moment. There does seem to be a rising anti-French sentiment in Burkina Faso. Late last year, a French military convoy, which was traveling from neighboring Ivory Coast through to Niger and Mali, where French forces are stationed, was stopped by protesters in Burkina Faso at several different locations throughout the country. There is a sense here amongst many within the G5, within the Sahel, and certainly in neighbouring Mali, which is also part of the G5 Sahel. There does seem to be a sense that the status quo with military assistance from France and the international community, including the US and the EU, doesn't seem to be working. As to whether this new government will be willing to cooperate with France or whether it will look to change the status quo, that is still unclear at this point.
That was journalist Henry Wilkins speaking on the phone from Ouagadougou with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson. Wilkins was outside the grounds of the state broadcaster, which the military has taken over. He said journalists are waiting for an announcement from the leader of the soldiers who detained Kabore, Colonel Paul Henry Damibia. Also, the Economic Community of West African States a few hours ago condemned what is called an attempted coup in Burkina Faso. A Taliban official says 3 days of talks with Western officials in Oslo are a step to legitimize the Afghan government. The meetings were taking place at a hotel in the mountains above the Norwegian capital and are the first time Taliban representatives have held official meetings in Europe since the group took over Afghanistan in August. Taliban delegate Shafiullah Azam made the comment after the first day of talks, during which Taliban officials met women's rights activists and human rights defenders from Afghanistan and the Afghan diaspora.
It's a step to legitimize Afghan government by these countries. Actually, based on 20 years propaganda, there was some problems regarding Taliban. But now this type of invitation and communication will help European community, U.S. or many other countries to erase the wrong picture of the Afghan government. We are requesting them to unfreeze Afghan assets and not punish ordinary Afghans because of the political disputes. And economic situation and political situation should be distinguished, and they should not sacrifice ordinary Afghans that because of the starving, because of the deadly winter, I think it's time for international community to support Afghans, not punish them because of their political disputes or 20 years war failures in Afghanistan. Regarding tomorrow or coming days discussion, we will discuss with U.S., European countries regarding acceleration of humanitarian assistance, reopening or of those postponed projects which already were donated by European Union, U.S. We will request them to reopen, restart those projects of ADB, World Bank. These projects were for ordinary Afghans. Ordinary Afghans were beneficiary of them. So we will request them to restart these projects and help Afghan economy, which is now in a leverage of collapse.
Afghan rights activist Moba Siraj was at the meeting. She says it is important to have a woman's representative present so women's concerns are understood and addressed.
Why do they choose to come here? I'm the voice of the people of that country, especially of some women, a group of women, a big group of women. They all want me to. That's why I stayed there. I stayed there to raise their voice, raise their concern, talk about it. I knew this was going to be happening. This is what the world does, you know. The world does not want to just forget about something and throw it to the dogs. No. For the longest time, they tried to do something and find a way for all of us to live together. And I wanted to be there to at least be their voice.
That was Moba Siraj, an Afghan rights activist in attendance of the meeting between Taliban officials and Afghan human rights defenders. Time for the headline news. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has been given a chance to go to the British Supreme Court to challenge a ruling that allows extradition to the United States to face criminal charges. U.S. authorities want Assange to face trial on 18 counts relating to WikiLeaks' release of vast troves of confidential U.S. military records and diplomatic cables, which the U.S. has said had put lives in danger. In December, the High Court in London overturned a lower court's ruling that he should not be extradited because his mental health problems meant he could be at risk of suicide. While judges refused him permission for a direct appeal to the Supreme Court on their decision, they said his case raised an issue of legal importance that he could ask the United Kingdom's top court to rule on. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Mike Hove, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The United Arab Emirates says it has foiled another Houthi missile attack following last week's deadly assault as the Iran-aligned group takes aim at the region's tourism and commercial hub. Yemen's Houthis are battling a Saudi-led coalition that includes the UAE. They have said they aim to make Abu Dhabi pay a high price for backing militias that are blocking Houthi attempts to capture prized oil regions. Torbjorn Solbert, principal Middle East and North Africa analyst at risk consulting firm Verisk Maplecroft, says that that could hurt the UAE's economy.
What we know so far is that the Emirati authorities reported there were two ballistic missiles launched from Yemen in the very early hours of the morning. And then shortly thereafter, the Emirati Air Force launched strikes inside of Yemen to destroy the missile launchers that launched these missiles. But on the ground in the UAE, what we've seen is, you know, air defense systems working as they should and intercepting those missiles. They were targeting unknown locations in Abu Dhabi. So the UAE, really, the coming days and weeks is really going to test investor sentiment. If we see another missile or drone attack that might break through the air defenses. If we look at last week, you know, the commercial impact was pretty limited. But if we do end up seeing a shift to more frequent attacks, then it's going to start to become a lot more difficult to shield the economy. I guess for the UAE as a whole, you know, its status as a reliable oil supplier and also as a hub for regional trade and logistics and finance, all of that is very much underpinned by what has so far been you know, a very stable and favorable security landscape. We're perhaps now seeing the start of a new trend, and that is the UAE regularly being targeted by missile and drones. You know, whether it's from Yemen or from Iraq, we've seen threats from both. This is a clear shift in the threat landscape. You know, previously the threat has been more to international shipping off the coast of the UAE. Now we're seeing key civilian infrastructure being targeted in the UAE. Another big reason for the growing concerns is that there is no quick fix for the UAE. The war in Yemen continues. Despite efforts to resolve that conflict through diplomacy or military means, the threat is still there.
That was Torbjørn Solvet, principal Middle East and North Africa analyst at risk consulting firm Verisk Maplecroft. Cameroon says it has opened an investigation to find out the names and nationalities of 17 people who died Sunday in a fire that caused an explosion in the capital, Yaoundé. The explosion in a popular nightclub also wounded 8 people. The government is calling for calm as thousands of football fans visit Yaoundé for the ongoing Africa Cup of Nations football tournament. Moki Edwin Kizeka reports from Yaoundé.
Hundreds of people, including Cameroonian government officials, turned out in Bastos, a Yaoundé neighborhood, on Sunday morning. They watched as neighbors and workers of Leaves, a popular nightclub, and Cameroon's military fire brigade searched 3 torch buildings in the area. Among the civilians helping to search for the injured was 27-year-old Gustave Lamelu.
C'est difficile de savoir qui est qui puisque on ne donne pas les cartes nationales.
Lamelu says civilians and the fire brigade of Cameroon's military have saved the lives of at least 40 people. He says it is difficult to know the names and nationalities of the injured and the dead, because clients do not present identification documents before having access to Leaves. Lamale said he is certain that the victims include people visiting Cameroon for the ongoing Africa Cup of Nations. In a statement, the government says an accidental fire at the nightclub spread to a cooking gas store. There were loud explosions from 6 gas canisters, causing panic in the neighborhood. Public Health Minister Manauda Malachi says President Paul Biya was informed of the incident as soon as it occurred. Manauda says Biya has instructed health workers to transport the wounded to Yaoundé Central Hospital.
Le président de la République a instruit que leur prise en charge soit totale et gratuite.
He says Biya has asked the public health ministry to treat the wounded free of charge and that arrangements be made for the dead to be buried in their places of origin after the investigation. He says Biya has instructed his ministry to give psychological assistance to traumatized family members of the injured whenever the traumatized relatives are identified. René Emmanuel Sadi, Cameroon's Minister of Communication, visited the site of the incident. He says it is too early to know the names and countries of origin of the dead and wounded.
We are still at the level of inquiry. The incident is quite serious. There's been people who are dead, others are injured, and investigations are going on. I think when all these things are finished, I will be giving the exact information concerning this very serious incident.
Sadi said the death toll may increase. President Biya has called for calm and assured football players, fans and match officials attending the Africa Cup of Nations in Yaoundé of their safety. Cameroon is hosting thousands of people for the tournament, which started on January 9th and will end on February 6th. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
It's time for Science in a Minute.
This is Science in a Minute.
When you think of a black hole, you may imagine a cosmic object with a voracious appetite for stars and planets. Black holes can generate a gravitational pull so powerful that anything and everything that comes near them is swallowed up, including light. Astronomers at Montana State University in Bozeman, Montana, found evidence of a black hole actually kickstarting star formation in a dwarf galaxy some 30 million light years away in the constellation Pyxis. The astronomers, using the Hubble Space Telescope, observed an outpouring of gas from the black hole that stretched out some 230 light years to a star-forming area of Hennise 210. The black hole is located at the center of the tiny galaxy, and its mass was calculated to be about 1 million solar masses. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
That's it for our show today, folks. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. I'm Mike Ove in Washington, D.C.